Claro.
Sí.
¿Ves? You are using also the Spanish.
Claro.
Venga. Guay.
¿Qué pasa? Bienvenidos a más un Atomcast Internacional. Yo soy Leonardo Romeo, diseñador industrial y gerente de diseño en Tech Electrodomésticos aquí en Madrid.
Y hoy hablamos con Bernd Kaufberg, Circular Economy and Innovation Consultant en Barcelona.
Start, no?
All right. Yes, so first of all, Bernd, thank you very much for your time, for being with us.
Thank you.
To share a little bit of your long career. I know you are a young guy, but let's talk about
I don't look like it.
No, you don't look like maybe you can, if you want to put a hat, no problem.
I was thinking about
feel free.
It.
To try exactly, to pass a exactly. Maybe, you know. And as usual, I would like to start asking about if
claro.
You can share something about your you can tell us
claro.
Your journey since the beginning, since when
this
you want to start till today, that you are working with lots of things, interesting things by the way. And then I'm as a curious
sí.
I can ask you lots of other questions.
Yeah, so like the start in Austria, obviously. I am from Austria, from a really small place.
Okay.
Just like between 2,000 and 3,000 people there in the mountains in Austria.
Wow.
So I always had like a very like strong connection anyway to nature, because like that was what was there, right? Don't know what to do. You basically then spend time outside. There's always like some cows around, a lot of cow farmers in the area and so on.
Snow,
a lot of
sure.
snow.
Always
so there's not really much going on in like summer nowadays, yeah. But when I was small, basically, like there was nothing going on. And then suddenly in the winter, thousands of people.
How far? Yes, of course. And how far for a big capital you were at that time? How far from
pretty
a big
much,
city?
Like, well, big city, like what you would compare, like actually said, okay, this is a city now. Definitely like an hour. An hour drive.
Wow. Okay.
It was amazing. Like it was amazing childhood. And at some point I basically had no idea what I actually wanted to study. And then I had a really, really, really good art teacher that gave me a book of one of her professors. That was kind of like the king of industrial design in Austria at that time. And he had a design university. Mm-hmm. So I applied to the place before not really knowing what was the like application kind of process, but apparently it was like pretty heavy.
Uh-huh.
Was very, very interesting, the studies. So it was the, in German, Fachhochschule Joanneum. It's like the higher school kind
okay.
of UNL.
Yes.
And kind of like all the way already in university, I started to have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with industrial design, because there was always a lot of innovation going on, new ideas. You always were kind of being thrown into another situation, into another problem with every project, because usually you would work as at a consultancy,
yeah.
And that means you never spend like I don't know more than a year or more than half the year with the project, which for me was really interesting because I still didn't know what I wanted to do, and
yeah.
It's great to figure out
what
you want to do actually,
and touch different
exactly.
aspects, different projects.
But at some point, I kind of always. Started to see a bit also the wastefulness of the profession, that it wasn't really we couldn't in very few cases make a choice about should we really do this project, is it helping anyone really? Yeah. Like, is it making the world better? As a like taking a step back and be like, okay, does the world need this? And exactly. So like I also kept talking with my friends about this. There was also a good book about exactly that topic, which is pretty much this is exactly that guy. The person is called Viktor Papanek. Nice. Viktor Papanek, and it's from the 70s, the book.
It's an old one. I remember too. I didn't read this one.
It's like a classic kind of design for the real world, like for human ecology and social change.
Yeah, exactly.
And I always had this in the back of my head. So kind of like when other people said like, oh, what's your motivation to do this? And what's your why are you in this? My answer kind of very often was, if I don't do the project, someone's going to do it even worse. So which was like a little bit like, okay, I'm going to try and make the best out of everything. And I'm kind of protecting people like from someone not like doing the same in a worse way. which was everyone always told me like, oof, that's a very negative way of approaching things.
It's a way, no problem. I think it's a way. Yes, you're right. Because I think it's a huge discussion about that, not to how we as designers, if we can really choose go in this only, no, I'm going to do only this kind of project that really helps people or make things different, I don't want to do any another trash, another product. But in the end, you have people that needs and how in the end you can improve, even if it's not the perfect word, no? But at least it's somehow to make it better, no? The industrial
total. And I think there is a lot of a leverage that you still have as a designer.
Mm-hmm.
It's limited if you only, I think, work in the limits of like a design department, let's say. I think the biggest thing throughout, like from the first internships that I had, like went through like all kinds of like different directions, like for a bit at Porsche Design, designed it in London, worked a bit in New York.
Porsche Design, but the company... was, as far as I remember, it was one of the first ones. But was Porsche Design that makes industrial
products? Industrial design product.
Exactly. Industrial design.
So they are actually like 10 minutes away from my hometown.
They're really near.
So it was like a very, very, very nice team there, really. So basically went through pretty much all of the fields. I was very happy that like I was able to see how they do interior design projects, how they do fashion design projects, how they do that kind of, because they really do everything. Then design it where it was a lot more service heavy kind of. Then actually switched to, after design it, to projects for the technical university in Delft. But it was in Cambodia.
Cambodia.
Because Cambodia? It was basically I wanted to like kind of get out of this field that I was in, just doing like traditional industrial design and so on. Also they did a lot of restructuring in London, so I like quickly kind of was already looking for another project basically at that moment. And the one in Delft was really interesting because it was basically a bit of a development project at the time Cambodia had like a very much of a boom of tourism, and a lot of hotels and restaurants and so on came up, and they were like the architects basically, or the planners of these projects, they were approaching craftsmen in Cambodia saying, we need like 50 chairs in a month. And then, these craftsmen were really doing everything by hand. They wouldn't really be able to do that type of project in a short period of time.
in industrial,
exactly.
Same
so
industrial
a lot
scale,
of the hotels kind of went to Thailand, to Vietnam, to surrounding neighbor countries, which were a lot more industrialized. Nice. So the problem was they were doing projects, but they just bought stuff from outside and then put it into Cambodia. So the Cambodian people weren't really benefiting from that. And that project itself was, nice. I think, always was really nice and always stayed with me. And that's when, that's why I think when I was continuing to work as an industrial, working as an industrial designer, I really often tried to focus really on like the essential stuff, trying to reduce as much as I can wasteful materials, try to, any social aspect of the project seemed like it was like always like very, very important to me, maybe like strangely important to me. But and then basically like that's in Barcelona after Cambodia, this,
But I mean, in just a question, in Cambodia, you're kind of helping the local ones how to improve and
so,
to make something more, let's say, to increase quantities.
Exactly. Basically, find a little bit of a balance between being able to take those projects, meaning being able to make larger numbers, maybe doing partnerships with other craftsmen, basically, to be able to take a larger project.
Yeah.
And also finding this balance of,
really nice.
Well, the traditional handcraftsmen, which had like a certain style, to go through the design process with them very often and or in like an iterative project process and showing them how to potentially like minimize some handcraft manufacturing aspects, but still keeping the traditional craftsmanship alive somewhere in the product. But in a little bit of a more reduced design version, because obviously the thing very often was, and this is completely understandable, it will be the same thing in for any master craftsman in Austria or Spain. If they're asked by a super expensive hotel, can you make a couple of chairs for us? They want to do the best they can. And the best they can in Cambodia is very ornamental, very like, stuff that takes long, right? And that's why it's worth a lot. We kind of needed to find that balance of like, yeah, that's cool, but also you need to be able to fulfill those orders.
Yes, maybe put on this part, this kind of something that you're going to take more time in this, try to make it simple, this part that's not so important. No, kind of. Well, teaching them how to, you know, how to improve their work and their quality maybe, and also their quantities, not
exactly.
production, basically. But it's nice because they don't have this idea, no?
Bueno,
they don't know about that.
I think the thing is, the thing is, they were very much aware about like protecting the environment. They were very much aware about that people from foreign countries were really valuing. Very natural production standards, etc. And then they saw like, okay, yeah, this has value. People like this, so it makes complete sense. So we're also gonna, this was a very nice thing. The problem was basically all of the foreigners that came into the country and tried to do all of the weird like businesses kind of that they could potentially do and like selling tropical wood back to Europe in a certain way or whatever. So there's all these things going on, but there were a lot of creative minds, especially the students that we worked with, super open. That was very nice. Afterwards I basically came to Spain, to Barcelona, because the project at some point, it was a European funded project in Cambodia. So at some point, well, it was it had a predetermined kind of like end. And then I came to Barcelona.
In Barcelona, because something, or is another project
because,
in Barcelona? Or?
Because I started working at Mecca, basically. Exactly.
Ah, so you came direct to Barcelona to study in Acre.
Exactly. This is it.
Okay. That time really, it's funny because it was a really small.
Yeah, it was very small at that moment.
And now we can say it's one of the biggest in Spain.
Even in Europe. The I was kind of like in the first wave of growth there. So yeah. That was very interesting to see how a company, how fast that can actually happen.
Exactly. Yeah, like 5-6 years.
Basically, like that's when we met at HP as well.
Yes, you came also to Nacar, but just to work inside as a contractor in HP.
And that's where we worked years ago.
Yes, when we met. Another life, you know.
I think I was working on the project that and probably still most kind of proud of, which is probably the least. Every detail of it is designed, but it looks like the least designed product actually, which I'm really like somehow proud of, which is this basically the ink cartridge box, right? Everyone knows about that.
Work with you. Long time doing your small bags, big bags,
exactly.
Cardboard. No, but you can tell a little bit about this product because
it was actually amazing, and also it brought me a lot of learning for projects afterwards in that same direction. It kind of started out as HP saying that the cartridges that we currently have are very outdated, and we would actually like to look into like doing just like a remodel basically of the same thing. Currently it was like a big plastic thing, like a plastic container with like a bag inside, a couple of like chips and like little electric connectors and so on on one side. But basically it was quite wasteful, to be honest, the product. And we at some point the thought was, and that was always like this thinking that I had, which was what if it was just a bag, and like you're gonna send it in a box, so why wouldn't it just be that? Because you're just gonna take it and you're gonna put it into a printer, and afterwards you would like it to be absolutely gone, right? The current cartridges that they had, even after use, they kept this massive volume of plastic, which was all air inside. And so at some point we basically brought up that concept of just putting a bag into a box, because the bag was always needed, because the liquid needs to be protected and it couldn't be a tetra brick. We also went there. We went to a lot of more reduced ideas, but there's a couple of minimum things that we needed to be. The interesting thing about the project was that got buy-in from people that had a lot of experience within HP, and also that were kind of very, I think, very respected within the company. Because I was still a very young person there with weird ideas, so no one would listen to that. But the thing was, if I could convince these people, which I know they already they do already have a motivation of like trying to be more sustainable within the company, etc. If I could win them over, then and they say this is feasible and this is actually not such a bad idea, then no one else would question me in any of the meetings. And that was kind of it. So that's when Silva, Miguel Boleda being the technical expert. Kind of made this team around this idea, which we were not supposed to work on. Everyone hated us for doing it. But in the end, it got a following. We didn't have any budget, right? Like, so we had a little bit of budget to think spend, of like a couple of ideas about it, and have sessions, introduction sessions, but those were on no salary sheet, basically. They were like invisible. And we kind of like kept building the project until we had enough material to actually present it and present the idea. And I think also in that moment, the people who saw that, obviously there was like a cost benefit and everything, but they also saw that, hey, there are all these people behind that idea already, which is already a very strong message. And all of those were kind of working somewhat for free on this. And then it became a full project. It became official. And a couple of years ago, it actually hit the market. It, like, from my end, complete success, because like plastic was eliminated by like between 80% and 90%.
It's a huge amount.
So the footprint of the production itself, and those are things that that kind of impact was only possible working at a larger enterprise. Right, because if you change that one thing that is kind of like their baseline product, the volume is incredible.
No, it's worldwide. No, and I think this is a nice example that big companies, big technology companies as HP, and one, the first point, no, is how do you need to, that time you, Silver, and this small team that started with a crazy idea, needs to work a lot, no?
See,
by yourselves doing things and then sell to the company, to the big guys, no, to the directors, to the CEO. And how is this? No, nothing is like, no, they are sending projects to us and let's try to make. No. Sometimes ideas came from below and then you grow this idea. And even a big company as HP, that maybe they are not thinking this exact direction. We know that they have lots of projects trying to sustainability, blah, 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 but not exactly. And when they saw, say, well, you sell in a good way, let's say. They bought, and then now I think they launched
two years ago. Exactly.
It takes like how many years? Like 5-6 years to do the
whole project. It probably was a 5-year thing.
If you consider,
I would think
5 years, not easy.
Around 5 years until it actually came out.
So you see, 5 years to make a new ink cartridge?
No, it's like massive. 5 years, but also like the supply chain that's in the back, and all of the things that you need to have in line when you actually launch it on such a big scale. Was heavy. It needed to go through testing and through everything, but everyone in the end was super happy. I think that was like, was still the
great example,
the project probably with the biggest impact, because every year it still basically is the reduction, like, of what could have happened.
Yes, and if you consider the volume, no? Yes, no, I think it, if you consider, I don't know, I don't have the numbers of the, you said 80% more or less, you are reducing plastic. But if you consider the numbers that they have worldwide for this large format printers, it's a huge
volume. Yeah, no, that was absolutely amazing. And afterwards, I kind of thought, I don't know if at HP a situation like this will appear again. And that's basically when I went to Holland to start a startup with two of my friends. And that's also like a project on my website still, that is basically being able to grow alternative protein, meaning mushrooms in that case, at home as a flower, like in the way of a flower bouquet. And they're absolutely beautiful. You can't really call them plants because they're like a little bit out of the like plant species group, but they're absolutely amazing organisms. And
But how you came up with this idea? Do you have a friend that
he was already doing that kind of thing? Exactly. We were actually at a there was an event in Barcelona where IKEA and Space 10 invited like circular economy experts, designers from Barcelona and from all over Europe, all over the world actually, to think of basically how. What kind of new circular economy concepts could, in very artistic interventions, actually could IKEA kind of play with in an urban environment? And that's when he was also part of this whole group. And so that's when we actually met each other. We immediately got to talk about, like, obviously, like, there was like a big event with a lot of mind from like-minded people. And we immediately kind of clicked. He's such a nice person. So I went up to him kind of to Holland, and we tried to basically make a product for him. And after we did a couple of tests and so on, I wasn't really, I think, of the Netherlands a very big fan. Also, I had my girlfriend in Barcelona, and I really wanted to go back to Barcelona.
That's a problem. yes. No, this is
exactly. Good reason, let's say. so that's when actually I think started to. I didn't want to go back to industrial design at that moment. And that is, yeah.
But I mean, before just to maybe for people, they're gonna say, "What the hell do you talking about the brochures?" So you kind of the idea of the company is to create. You buy something
exactly.
A rocket, something like a rock with special materials that you have the mushroom seeds
exactly
inside,
so
red, and then you need to put water or to put in a humid place. I don't know how to
exactly
how,
so how we to tried work, out a lot of stuff actually behind. At the end came to this something that works without electricity. We tried a lot of, so as a very, okay. taking a step back even, there's a lot of culinary mushrooms that you can grow very easily at home. And there's a couple of, at that moment, like mushroom growing and stuff was a little bit of a thing in Europe and like just very, like a little bit of a boom about it. But the things that you could buy were really disgusting kind of because they were transparent bags where, you actually saw all of the mushroom already growing inside. So some people were like, "Ooh, what's that?" To me, after you understand it and what's going on in the bag, it's super beautiful because you can actually see what's happening. But
it's okay.
These kits that were these home grow kits that were sold, they were like really disgusting. Didn't really work very. Like you kind of needed to spray it in a weird way. And what we wanted to do was something that you could actually put on the table, have a beautiful flower, like basically a mushroom bouquet growing like a flower bouquet, because you have different colors, yellow, pink, all kinds of stuff. And once they're fully outgrown, you basically just take them and you can cook with them. Exactly.
You can cook with them. Right.
So the project was really interesting because we did a lot of user testing as well on, because it's such a new thing and no one really knows how to even interact with a mushroom. So that's why we wanted to have something that's absolute minimum from your side, and you just put it there, you open a thing, and then it just like does its magic by itself. It keeps itself humid and you don't have to do much.
And at the same time, it's like a decoration piece also because of the colors, like a bouquet.
Exactly.
But you need to explain to people, come on, it's just to make food. No, it doesn't make tea.
Sure.
It's a different mushroom.
Definitely.
Or maybe
no.
It's a good marketing.
No, the even official message is that yes. It's only for growing culinary mushrooms.
For food. Yeah, culinary. You know.
Exactly.
Feel free.
It's open source. You can do whatever you want.
Open source, you can do.
Exactly. No.
Come on. But in the end, and what happens in the end?
In the end, we took different paths because they wanted to focus more on like growing it themselves, also on small scale. And I wanted to try out a couple of different things, but just like didn't align in that sense. So we said like, okay, then I'll be in Barcelona. I'll focus on my stuff again. And whenever they actually want to get into something bigger, obviously, I'm right there again.
Yes.
Exactly. So they're still experimenting and stuff.
And then you're back to... Exactly. And then you're back to Barcelona. So that time you were already out of HP. And then you became a period out of HP, and then you back to HP also to
exactly. What I basically did was I was still coming back. I was still doing a little bit of stuff together with the people in Holland, just to like finish up the project and everything. But So I came back and I didn't want to do industrial design. I already by accident always fell more into like the more sustainable project or sustainability focused project. I wanted to double down on that a little bit and started really studying all of the things that I didn't know. So I basically made sure that I only consult for like 3 days a week. And I sometimes would consult 5 days a week and just get like my whole schedule full of projects if needed. But in the first years, I really filled all of that time with just like doing courses, reading books, studying a new master. I focused a lot on programming and artificial intelligence, because I want, like, that was a booming thing, and I really wanted to understand how that works, and I wanted to understand what is the maths behind all of the systems and so on. So I really got into that, and also sustainable product development, circular economy, and figured out, hey, there's something called life cycle assessments. And like, how do you do those? Like, basically, I wanted to understand, I was reading all of those books about like, this is the CO2 footprint of that product. This is the CO2 footprint of, so, but I didn't understand how are you getting those numbers? And how are you calculating those? So basically got into courses to become pretty much a life cycle assessment professional in that sense. I saw that in product design, one thing that happens very often is that a product would be developed and it would afterwards kind of get a certification, or there would be like someone writes a report on what the footprint is, but at that moment you can't do anything anymore. Like, it's just the finished product. You just made like some numbers
for it, of course.
But no one's gonna use this. This is just for.
But it's that's is and the that's number that. You cannot maybe exactly. For the next generation.
So I saw like a bit of a gap between the design development and the actual outcome, because that information is really critical and really valuable. Yeah. In the beginning, when you think of five different business models, five different design concepts, and you're like, okay, I want to be able to understand what is the more or less sustainable one of each of those. So that's when I really started last year to do experiments with like also consultancies and so on. To figure out at what moment does this information make most sense and it most helpful to them, in what form, and can you even make an assessment of a product or a hypothetical product, something that's not even there, but you kind of know what the design looks like, but you still want to figure out like generally. Is this, should we make it out of wood, or should we make it out of steel, or should we make it out of that kind of product. And yeah, that is pretty much what I studied all of that time. And very freshly, I think last year, really, I got into doing more of this. And actually, instead of industrial designing, doing that. So
you kind of helping, mm-hmm. let's say, companies,
exactly.
any type of company, how can they think about this project before
exactly.
implement, of course, no? How did you can make something exactly. more sustainable, or even try to get the CO2 footprint,
exactly.
et cetera, et cetera. So you can help them and try to guide the company or choose the best way to reduce, no? Because I think in India, I don't know, you can tell, I'm not a specialist in this area. I know, but I don't know how to calculate. I have the same doubt as you. Say, oh, we have this size.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know how do you, whatever. But and I think the target, you can tell better, but what's the main target when a company, for example, hires you, say, okay, Ben, I want to work with you, but what
exactly
what do you offer to me? I will reduce, but as a company, I will tell from my
I know
side,
what you're
okay,
saying.
But I want to reduce, but in the end, I want to win more money. Because in the end, it's always about money, because I need to spend some money with you. And okay, I will reduce, but how, or even worse or better, how can I sell to my clients? Because I think that we discussed it, when we met last time. How can I say to my clients or to my audience that what I'm doing, it's worth in there, no, when they want to buy my product?
So
I don't know. I know
it
that's
is,
a,
no,
a
no,
tough
but
question.
It is exactly the right one. And I think a lot of circular economy experts kind of like wash it off with, you're going to reduce risks for the future. And when the carbon taxes are coming in Europe, then you will have to pay more. Those are still years off, right? For some companies or larger companies, that will absolutely be pressuring them, and they will have they have to do something about that. And I see large companies already at least measuring their footprint quite well, trying to figure out even not just their own companies, but scope 3, meaning like what are their providers doing, what are their suppliers doing, mm-hmm. what are their customers doing with that product, and what kind of like footprint is that generating. So they're getting into that just because they need to be ready. And if you're a large company, you need to start counting your numbers already now in order to have those before paying the fine in a couple of years. But I do see in a lot of, and that's like realistic, you are losing money now already. Is for just to take an example, the smartphone industry. Smartphone sales globally had the peak in like 2016 or something, and it's going down drastically in Europe, going down faster than in a lot of other markets. Because one phone or the other, they're all very much the same. All cameras are good. Mm-hmm. All phones are pretty fast. Actually, the last one that I got on back market, which is a secondhand platform, I just got it because I dropped mine crazy, like that it was unsavable. And I'm actually worse off with this phone because the camera is different, and I don't really like the camera, the new one. In that area where you don't really have a lot of differentiation, where the new product, the next line for next year, is so little mm-hmm. different from the one before, the incentive for people nowadays is very little to actually buy a new phone, especially when the prices, with inflation going up, etc. There's a lot of people who just can't buy them anymore. And the market, exactly, the market of people who go secondhand is growing so much, and new sales are dropping. So already the message to any mobile phone manufacturer in Europe is, you are now losing money. You have to offer repair services or so to actually keep people with you, to keep people with your company. Otherwise, they'll just like pick whatever cheapest is the next one. But if I know that I get a good repair service, like from this one, the only reason why I didn't get like a Fairphone was because my carrier didn't offer it, and I actually wanted to get a bit more of a damaged secondhand phone in that moment. Also because I wanted to try out Backmarket, which again, like, is an absolutely amazing platform.
No, it's really nice, and the prices are, and I like, because they put everything about this model, which how much this is a really good condition, this is more or less. So they try to put all the information. Exactly. They don't want you, no, to put something that is not true. That's something really really interesting, no, nowadays, because usually they want to sell a second hand and say
everything's
perfect. And so that's not, no. This is exactly like this. You're gonna pay.
Exactly. And that, I think, is the message to a lot of companies, especially in like home appliances, consumer electronics. Is the chance that you are already losing money is if you do the market predictions right or forecasts right. If you're not.
Sure.
Getting into a more circular dynamics, which very often means really just have a good repair service, have a good pickup or take back program, and have a maybe enter in some way the second hand market, is already where you can make money. Like, you can now have a second foot, because The leg that is now holding a company is getting smaller, and it's already getting smaller.
I think one good example that you told us about the mobiles is more appliances. For example, nowadays, if you buy a blender or a toaster, it's, I would say, 99% of the case when you have a problem, you buy another one. Because it's something that's so cheap, like 40, 50 euros. Man, I know that's more expensive to repair. And then I bought a new one. But whatever brand, because there are different brands, Chinese, local, and you say, well, this one looks better. And if it doesn't work, I buy a new one. So, but in the end, you are kind of spending more money, increasing, you know, all these this broken equipment. You don't know where are going. And home appliances is the same thing, because I don't know, even to update things, because you have a induction
stove,
plate stove, or hob, you know, induction hob. And then if you need a new one, okay, you can buy a new one. That's the only way nowadays. But in the end, the ceramic glass and even the box that goes below that are supporting, you know, it's quite the same thing, because the ceramic is the ceramic. If you have a good condition, you can use for, I don't know, 20, 30 years. But in the end, you buy a new one. This one goes to the trash. I don't know what they do. The oven's the same thing. You want a new oven, but the cavity, it takes, I don't know, some companies have 20 years old cavities, because cavity is it's quite the same. Difference. But only the frontal glass handle, maybe the digital interface, but it's I would say 30%.
Absolutely, and you you're trashing everything.
But you don't have this, and I'm working this environment, and we try it's something that, as you made in HP, something that we need to sell, let's say, internally. But it's something that how to not to have our users.
Claro,
this time, because if they want to make a, I want a new oven, okay, we cannot repair in this case, but we can update your product to a new one to make Matt a better match with your new kitchen. But you don't need to buy a new oven. And we know that people, for example, in Spain, they don't use oven. It's once in a week.
Claro.
So the cavity, it's perfect just to put the pans inside, no, to hide the fryer. So, but and in the end, you buy a new oven and you have all this big amount of steel.
Claro.
You can do
it. The thing already, like one thing that I hear really often, and some strategy I think against this. And it's different from like what, for example, happened at HP with the ink cartridge. Yeah, the ink cartridge was a very specific moment in the time of HP when they needed when a systematic change in one snap was possible. Mm-hmm. But with that, with for example, like these repair services, you already like you make it a lot more understandable and manageable if you really just say, let's do a pilot in one city. And see basically and almost do like a fake service of, hey, we know right now they're not really like repairable, but we're going to give like people like some small incentive, maybe work with the, the waste management company of the city, of the waste management department of the city. And say, cool, like, before things get thrown away, we're just going to drive behind you for like a month or a couple of months. And we take all of the ovens and we're now going to like make a little bit of a secondhand platform or like just repair services just in one area of a city, right? Where things suddenly become a lot more manageable because now you don't have to think of, but I'm sitting in Germany as well and how am I going to get to Germany and like figure that? Like, that is crazy. Yeah. That is to implement a strategy like this on like globally or like even Europe-wide is nuts. And I think pretty impossible. And I would treat any of those projects like any startup or spin-off or any small project that is just a momentary local pilot.
Great.
And the only thing that the one thing though that I have to say is even for these little pilots, these projects usually they really need a designer. They need a service designer, also a supply chain person, someone from R&D, because really often if I talk with one person from supply chain only, then they say, "Yeah, this is very nice and like this is cool, but we can only do part of the project." And then if I talk with someone from the design department, they're like, yeah, but we can only figure out like how to like access the screws a little bit better and so on. But the thing is like those five or four people together, even if it's just a small group, they have all of the knowledge to do an entire pilot like this. You do the calculations, you do a little bit of a forecasting, you do a potential benefits. And suddenly it's like just a presentation from management away that next month we're actually going to do this. And that's like, I think the thing where people still, there is still this one barrier of getting these people together just to basically one person calling up a couple of other departments and saying, let's just talk about this for a minute. The same thing that is what doesn't change to the project from the ink cartridge is where I went to people and said, can you give me feedback on this? Can we just like all five of us like meet at a table and just like talk about something very hypothetically? It's not a project. But in those moments, suddenly everyone's like, this could work. And it's not even far away. Like, it's not even that unrealistic. And it's then like that step of like, actually, it's not even that far away to present this to someone. Then it's not far away too. And suddenly you have a pilot. And if that pilot works, suddenly you have that as a regional pilot. And suddenly you actually like let it grow.
And then you can scale. No, I think that's the point. Is begin small, no, and not do any. We can do basically nothing alone. So you need the other. We are, because some people say, no, we are designing, we are the best. No, man, we are one more. No,
exactly.
On this company, but you need to work with other experts. No, to make it. It worked, so that's, I think, and begin small. So as you said, mate, you can make a pilot, an internal pilot, just with your employees, and then you can try with their own products. Let's do with only people here. Let's see if it works, and then you can expect if it works, of course.
Exactly,
you can scale it. It's just a matter of timing.
Because right now, the companies or the startups that are currently like really successful in that field. It's more of a service thing. It's really more of a service thing because, for example, but just to take an example, Backmarket again, what they do is right. They don't create a new player in the field. You have the producer of a company, you have the user, and you have like thousands of repair services that are already existent in Europe. They don't open new repair services. They just work with a couple of ones and say, you seem you have good ratings, so we work with you. Like, do you want to be in our platform? Mm-hmm. And the only thing they do is they handle the communication between that repair service that is probably like some grandpa store somewhere on the corner, doesn't even have a website. But they do all of the communication for this store. With the customer, they make sure that it's being sent correctly. They are really mm-hmm. just taking care of this one, like two-way relationship there, and they do that brilliantly. Mm-hmm. So you kind of need to figure out what also like where in this entire system your company could also, with the least amount of effort, have the biggest impact. I mean, maybe you're just a communicator. Maybe you don't have to take care of all the other stuff.
Yeah. No, exactly. Sometimes I think this is the problem. We want to reinvent the wheels. Come on, man. Even internally, sometimes in the company, when we are discussing with engineers or even internally in the design department, sometimes we start, oh, let's make this great thing. I mean, come on, man. There is the thing is already existed. Let's just improve it or use it as a base because basically everything that's invented, already invented. We know that we don't need to create maybe small things, but if you saw big examples in big companies, they are kind of using existing things, and improving or looking the gaps. No, as you said, the Backmarket, please Backmarket. No problem.
Yeah, we can tag.
We are talking about it, but exactly. No, but that's the idea. So they look the market, said, oh, there is a necessity here. There's some needs here.
Exactly.
That we can use. Nobody's is doing that, and people really need no better prices. They look the market as you told us. No, they are kind of declining. So, and now they have the market. They are kind of alone. No,
see, there's a couple of like regional other ones, but they are the ones like really expanding. Like now they're getting into like vacuum cleaners. Exactly. They're trying to get into everything that is at home.
It's great. It's a great example. There is this other one that I remember that I discussed with Mark Fabra from Lucid, the cell phone, mobile
Fairphone.
You know, the from Fairphone. Netherlands, no, from Holland. Yeah, I think this one that you can update it, you can ask parts they have their website, and then you can update, you can do whatever you wanted. That's an incredible project.
Really, and I really fix it, What is like nice is the iFixit, it has a really strong collaboration with the Fairphone. I guess they just started out as like a YouTube channel to like where they just fixed stuff. I think they had like a channel. But,
I don't know, maybe.
Now they are like consulting governments on like right to repair topics, basically. So they really... blew up massively as well.
No. Yeah, no, no, that's incredible. And how do you see this new, let's say, technology? We can say about AI now, as you said, if you are kind of looking for this new emerging. No, it's not emerging. It's a real. It's real, no? How this AI or whatever other technology could help in this, let's call circular economy or sustainability, design, whatever you want to call.
I have hopes because, like, maybe I shouldn't have them. But I think especially in the field of like supply chain and efficiencies and so on, I assume AI would bring a lot in that area. One thing, like for example, I think which could be interesting already in the next years is. And I hope I'm right about this, right now the reason why I wouldn't get a really 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 old smartphone from like 2013 or whatever, which I could, man, because like why not, is the software updates. At some point it just doesn't work anymore, and that's this this planned obsolescence of product. Where a company like Apple knows exactly that in 5 years you won't get any software update anymore, because you actually, like, when you look at the phone and you like read through it, it says I think like up to 5 or whatever big system updates, and then like you're out. Or like not 5, I don't know, but it's a specific number.
No, it's some, but they know, because they know that the components they cannot afford more. It's what I have the 7, the iPhone 7 for more than 7 years.
Well, yeah,
7 years
very
and
good.
I have my phone. Yeah, very good. And the last one was the iPhone 5, and I use it for 5 years. So
nice, man. You're really way above average.
No. And I still love it, my phone. Of course, now it's getting, every time
you have to have a moment of like meditation every time that you open an app. Yeah.
A little bit. You see, but it's because of the hardware. The hardware doesn't support, because they are increasing. Like Windows, if you try in the old machines, old computers, you put a Windows.
You'd be surprised, though, that it's not necessarily the hardware. Like it's if you run other software on it, with every update, again, like, It's proven that these companies actually make your phone slower, and they pay fines for it. But the amount of money that they make just by making phones slower is way more. Like they're like, vale, whatever. Like we just pay this, and we continue to do whatever we do. but I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Where were we?
We are talking about when you, for example, this planet obsolescence.
With AI, the
Apple one, they know that you have five times to update your software.
What I would hope is that I don't know if you've seen this like Rabbit company or the phone that basically just has AI on it. It doesn't have an interface. Basically, it just.
Exactly, the new one, exactly. The orange one, no?
Arguable design.
Yes, I know. I didn't know a lot about, but I know you see every time when I open my YouTube, there are kind of some something that pop-ups in my screen.
Exactly. I would hope that in some way gets rid of operating systems itself, and just basically you get the function that you need in the moment. It's like if you don't have an app, you just need a very specific function in that moment. The AI can generate exactly that function. It's gone in a second.
It's like a cloud. It's in the cloud. You just use what you need. Something they just create the environment, this on your equipment, not phone, because I don't know if it's a phone, but he creates in that moment for you, and then when
you don't have it, it's gone. And I think it's something that could Hopefully functionally
Yes.
last for a lot longer, just because all of these things can, like an old version of whatever, like this AI thing could talk with a new version and an old version because it understands basically both systems, and there wouldn't be any
system.
Like versioning anymore. There wouldn't be any like this kind of planned obsolescence, I hope, can get weaker because of that. Because the AI itself would just maybe like how what runs in the background somewhere, it gets updated, but it's not on your phone. It's just as long as you have connection, it just is as smart as you want it to be, and it can always be this stupid box that you could have for 20 years, which would be amazing.
I think that
would be absolutely fantastic.
No, and in the end, you know, for example, in the case of Apple or even what the other companies, I would say that maybe a little more complicated because of Android, they are using all the companies the same platform, not the same software. But in the case of Apple, they don't need, let's say they need to buy phones. Okay, they have something related. But in the end, they are winning money with the applications, all this market of applications, even the software they could sell or license the software. So they can go in this direction. They don't need to buy more hardware. No, I think because they could win money in another way. They could do like that. I can license my software to you, this improvement, this update. But if you want a new one, okay, your problem. But you really don't need. No, they don't really. I don't know the other companies as they use the same operational system. I don't know if it works in this case, but
I mean, say.
Could be, no, or as you said, the phone or the equipment, the communication equipment that's called like, they are kind of adapting according to the user, because sometimes you have a really strong equipment in terms of hardware, software, and people, I don't know, an old guy or a really one gun, they are not using all the functions, all this force that you have in your hand, but you are using just to take photos. Okay, or using just to see WhatsApp. Man, you have a Formula One and you are using as a regular car. So, and maybe you can adapt, you know, you can reduce all the use and then and try to have a longer life by artificial intelligence.
Exactly.
No, of course.
So I think in that sense, I have high hopes for that. I don't know if it will pan out. Some capitalist idea will probably go over this.
Yes, a little bit communist, no, but I think it's maybe not other companies, but I think there are lots of other or lots of people thinking about that, and maybe it's not 100%. We know capitalism is here. Well, they need to produce to sell things, but.
Yeah,
there is a way, maybe.
And the other thing I think which would also be great is with all of the, and again, history taught us different because in the Industrial Revolution also like people lost jobs. Now it's basically, the only thing that is now interesting is that it's not studied, like it's not the working people, the working force that kind of like loses jobs, but it's actually people who studied or like it's basically like blue collar jobs, right? Since that I think hasn't happened before, I would really hope that I think there's a little bit of a move towards work for each person to actually like work on something that is not just to be at a job and do like be at a job and work on your project without much of a meaning or goal to it. But those people actually spending their time with meaningful stuff and more caring, like hopefully more caring about the people around them, the society kind of that they live in, contribute to that. I think this is something that is very difficult for AI to copy because it's about like, if we enjoy our life as a society or not. And yeah. I think it's easier for people to contribute to that and spend more time. Like maybe that's in the future, our like work, our everyday work, right? Caring for people because the rest of the work is already done by the AI anyway.
Exactly. No, it's something difficult to say nowadays as technology is kind of creating distance between us, between humans, more, let's say, because we are kind of losing this essence, of the of our race, let's say. But I think it's the only, I agree with you, it's something that it is impossible to have some technology that could make something about that. It must come from us, from the human, let's say, race, that we can do something.
Because it's cool.
The problem is to change people's mind. That's the problem here. We are more individualist nowadays. We are internally we create our small world around the computer. Our cocoon, but it's true.
Obviously, there's always this thing of this balance of like, for example, what's the Crea AI, for example, like the AI that does like the nice, like, or Viscom, like that does like nice renders within like a second, just over like a little bit of a sketch for you and whatever. If I had that and I taught, basically digital design sketching at my university even, and I really like enjoyed doing it as an art form kind of. But as soon as I got to work, now I need to like draw, I don't know how many concepts and so on, I was like
something.
Or in that moment, I would have already liked to have that AI because I don't want to stay here until 2 a.m. having to sketch 50 concepts just because I promised to a client that I'm going to do that. I would rather go home and enjoy time with the people that I care about. And I think if we can figure out that this is the goal of artificial intelligence, then I'm completely okay with that.
You can have a better quality time, so you reduce your this kind of things that you need to do. But because in the end, the most important thing is the concept. If you need to generate 5 concepts, you have the idea, but to generate, you need to spend time. So you don't need to spend this time. So you have better quality.
Exactly.
You have maybe more concepts in a few minutes. And then you can go home or do your activities, whatever you want, no? You go to the mountains.
Back to the mountains.
No, as the home appliances industry always said about the washers, dishwashers, it's the classic way to sell. You say, no, you with a nice washer machine or a dryer or whatever, you have more time to spend with your family.
Yeah.
That's the idea behind this project. Of course, it's really old products, but the idea was the same, to reduce this. I need to wash my dish. Come on. So you spend an hour. No. Just put everything there and then go to the living room to see a soap opera or a movie, whatever you want. So you have this. It happens. And now it's maybe a time that maybe we need to figure out how to enjoy, maybe, artificial intelligence. I think this is the point. Not to make things more difficult. Though. Sometimes it's our way to think, no, let's complicate artificial intelligence. And then even the artificial intelligence becomes crazy with us. Okay, man, I don't know what you want. You want everything.
Exactly.
Humans are not easy.
Exactly.
You know better than me.
Exactly. We are not. We are definitely not. But
And what's your going this direction? What's your recommendation? What's your advice for younger designers or people that are studying or starting in the profession of design? What do you have any advice to go? Because it's always difficult to sell to these young guys, goals to try to work in this way, what you can tell to them?
I think the biggest factor, it's almost impossible to know what you really want to do when you start out anyway. So I think the point is like that it's completely okay to revisit kind of like yourself like after a few years and do completely different things again. To which again like also in the field of AI is mega important, because at some point something that you knew before is maybe invalid in another second. Shouldn't really see that as a burden, but a little bit more as a now let me think of what I would like to learn, and let me spend some time on actually learning that and trying to like figure out a new skill, figure out a new thing. Because just like in Singapore, actually, the ministry now had a speech that they will have a new, for people above 40, a new funding, government funding, for actually them to do new masters, to do new studies, because they see that AI is taking a lot of their professions, basically, and they see that in a few years they might have a lot of jobless people, basically. So I think it's true. Instead of saying like, okay, this is what I like, this is what I study, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, accept that it's fine to like change and even change sides completely. If you want to work as a supply chain person, basically, for a couple of years, wow, you will be an absolutely amazing designer afterwards, if you want to come back to design. All of these experiences just add up, and you're never done, basically. So,
great advice. No, yeah, and I think the most important thing, you know, that you said something, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, maybe in the 80s and the 70s was really true, but nowadays I'm quite sure that's
flexible
to be updated all the time. Flexible, exactly. That flexible, first of all, flexible, and then stay turned with all the new technology. That's the only way to survive.
Exactly. Adapt, overcome. Exactly.
Well, man. You see, we are talking here more than an hour.
What's that?
Something.
Mira.
Yeah. 1 hour and 15, more or less. It's time goes really fast. Well, and as usual, was great, man. I don't know if you have any other, but I think
we talked about a lot of stuff.
A really compact of your great career. And as usual, I would like to make some, the only two questions that I always made for my guests. The first one, if you have any person who inspired or who still inspires you, that could be a professional or whoever you want to mention. To us.
This is going to sound really cheesy, I guess. But it's actually my girlfriend who is it's absolutely true, because she is so open to ideas and so like investigative kind of to things. Even if you would say she would always be open to any argument that comes, even if she already has a position on a topic. And basically like remodels a little bit her brain quickly if the arguments like are more pointing in one or the other direction. So she's like a really like seemingly objective, like kind of like balanced on things. And I would, and also like I think inspires me a lot on basically doing a lot of studying.
And basically the profile, this the more or less the profile that we're talking about.
Exactly. That is exactly
the profile.
And that is not easy because exactly if you put a lot of effort into a certain path, you want to follow that path because you already put so much effort into it. But I think always being able to take a step back, look at the situation, and figure out what path you wanna take. I think that is that, and also the she has a massive drive to just learn new things, and I think that also keeps me motivated. So
great,
a person that also like keeps me at it.
Great,
and I would be lying if I would say anyone else. I think.
No problem. Tell us her name that people could find. Link
Antonella de Teano Vivas. Sí.
Great. I put the name below that people can can check it.
She is very, very inspiring.
Great. And the second one is if you have, I think you already show us a
book. Absolutely.
That you like it, or a website, or a podcast, or something that you can, no?
Sí.
Look, or do you like to
sí.
Search for information?
So two things. One is like a New Scientist. Also has a podcast, but New Scientist, the paper, the newspaper, they have very good information about technology. They also will revisit new technology or like AI stuff or about climate change or whatever. And they will revisit stuff if they ever made either wrong information or whatever, or if there's new studies that actually is a counter argument to something that they did before. So they're not set in one direction, but they also go wherever the science goes, basically. So New Scientist, definitely amazing. This one, Always, Designed for the Real World, wonderful book.
Great.
Anything else? I think that would be it. I think if you already read this, you have like a really good understanding of my mental.
You can start opening your mind. Yes, exactly. As change your
It did very much influence everything.
If we inspire a lot of people, it's a classic one for sure. And is it still updated?
Which is crazy. That's, it's 50 years ago they wrote it.
There are some as movies also. No, I think that when you
get it right, you get it right.
They got. Yes, exactly. I think it's timeless. No, if you do something great.
Man, was super great, nice talking to you.
Thank you very much. Now we need to make the same chat, but now let's do it in Spanish so we have both.
So we can have the right subtitles.
Exactly, then we have all the subtitles in both languages.